Do you know the story of Esther? In case you don't. Esther was a young Jewish woman who'd been raised by her uncle, Mordecai. And as the story is told, she's chosen in a beauty contest to be the queen of Persia after the king has had his queen banished for refusing to come at his bidding to parade herself for his friends at a feast. Mordecai is the one who hears about the beauty contest and brings Esther to participate. And when she's chosen to be the queen, he tells her to hide that she is a Jew. And he stays nearby, Mordecai does, keeping an eye on her and on the doings in the kingdom. And as he's nearby, he hears about a plot to kill the king. And he tells Esther about this plot, and she tells the king about it. The plot is thwarted, and the king, knowing that Mordecai was the source, gives public credit for this. And in the meantime, the king appoints a new prime minister, Haman. Mordecai refuses to bow down before Haman, which infuriates Haman, and he convinces the king, because of this, to kill all the Jews in the kingdom. The king puts Haman in charge of this project, and the persecution begins, and so Mordecai is no longer allowed to come into the gates at this point because he has donned sackcloth and ashes in mourning, and he sends a messenger to Esther to tell her to go to the king and ask him to stop killing the Jews. And she agrees, even though it's illegal, complete with a death sentence, for anyone to approach the king without being summoned. And so she's afraid. She first approaches him and asks him to bring Haman to a private dinner for the three of them, which he happily agrees to. And so because you'll remember that Esther won her position in a beauty contest. He and Haman go to the dinner, and the king agrees there to having dinner the next evening as well. And so on his way home from this dinner, Haman sees Mordecai at the gate, and Mordecai continues to refuse to bow down to Haman, and again, Haman is enraged. He goes home, and he kicks the dog. Well, I don't know if he has a dog, but he complains to his wife, who advises him to order Mordecai impaled on a stake. And he decides to ask the king for this the next morning. That same night, as Haman is complaining to his wife, Mordecai also enters the king's thoughts. And he remembers Mordecai as the person who once saved his life. And he realizes, somewhere in the middle of the night, that he never rewarded him for this. And so in the morning, when Haman comes to him to ask permission to kill Mordecai, the king beats him to the punch and first asks Haman how he should honor a most loyal subject. Haman thinks he's talking about him. And he suggests dressing the subject in fine robes and letting him parade around on his best horse with the kingly crest on him. And the king says, well, that's a great idea. And so Haman is a little surprised when the king tells him to go get Mordecai and dress him up in his finest robes and put him on a horse. But he has to do it. And so that evening, he has to have dinner with the king and queen again. And it's at this dinner that Esther tells the king that someone is seeking her death and the death of her people. The king is furious, and he demands to know who. And Esther comes out. She reveals herself as a Jew. She tells the king it is Haman who wants to kill her. The king runs out in the garden, out into the garden in this rage, and Haman is left there facing Queen Esther, and he begs for his life. The king comes back and sees his prime minister, and the line in the chapter of the Bible verse says something about him falling on the couch where she is lying, which is a little strange, and I'm not sure what to make of that. But the king made the absolute worst of it, and orders Haman to be impaled on the stake that Haman had set up for Mordecai. He then appoints Mordecai as his prime minister and Mordecai and Esther immediately issue an edict that allows the Jews to defend themselves against anyone who tries to harm them, and they establish the holiday of Purim to celebrate the victory and the victory of their people, their survival and the victory of their people, the holidays that our Jewish cousins and members are celebrating this weekend. It's a whirlwind of a story, and it's full of these quick emotion-based decisions and dire consequences and fear as a motivator and all these other manifestations of patriarchy. The times were dramatic. And at the center, a young woman of an oppressed people finds her voice. Esther won her position in a beauty contest, and there's no account in the scripture or in the Midrash that she would ever have thought of taking action to save her people without Mordecai whispering in her ear. But Mordecai convinces her to take the risk of seeking an audience with those in control, to gamble her life on the power he knows she has and she doesn't yet see, and to speak her truth. The scene in chapter 4 of the book of Esther where she makes this decision gives me chills, and I want to read it to you. So Hathach, the messenger, went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa, to show Esther and explain it to her. And he told him to instruct her to go to the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, "All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death, unless the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king." When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer: "Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this." Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai: "Go, gather all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. Here ends the reading. "I can't go to the king with this," she first tells her uncle. "He's going to kill me." He has to remind her that her life is in danger regardless, because she's of the people the king has given Haman permission to seek out and kill. He shares his faith with her that the Jews will be delivered from this persecution, no matter what, sometime, and convinces her of her own power and her own influence. And she goes for it, but only after seeking his spiritual support. "Fast for me for 3 days." The tables are turned between them by the end of this scene. So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. And they remain turned through the rest of the story. She is the key player. Esther creates a plan that is based on the only power she knows how to claim: her husband's adoration of her. And she uses that power to push back against the wrong that Haman has orchestrated. History is full of women, and other people too, who have learned to recognize that they were perfectly suited to be in their place and time, and taken the risk of finding their power there, speaking their truth, and impacting the greater good. This month, James Reeb and Viola Liuzzo spring immediately to my mind. Both left their families and their privilege to answer Dr. King's call to come to Selma to support the voting rights movement with their presence, with their bodies. Both experienced the culture shift from being a relatively safe white person in the North to being seen and treated as race traitors and being reviled and targeted. And both lost their lives, finding and using their power to take action in the ways that power prepared them to do. And we honor their memory. Other people who come to mind are Katherine Johnson and Dorothy Vaughan and Mary Jackson, three of the black women who worked as practical mathematicians, human computers, before the creation of automated ones in the space race days of NASA. Ms. Johnson is portrayed in the recent movie Hidden Figures as the first black woman working with the flight research team, and her presence in this room of all these young white men is shown to open their eyes to the personal impacts of segregation. Ms. Vaughan became the first black supervisor at NASA in 1948 and is depicted in the film, at least, as earning the title by doing all of the work of a supervisor for years before her promotion. She was already there. And Ms. Jackson was NASA's first black female engineer, who had to work actively to put herself in those right places at the right times to do that work. And in our Unitarian and Universalist heritages, Sarah Alden Bradford Ripley took advantage of her brother's books and willingness to talk about their Harvard educations in the early 1800s when that education was not accessible to her, but it was all around her. She was steeped in it, and she grew her own ideas and passed along a thirst for knowledge in the children that she taught. Olympia Brown found her strength in her Universalist faith and used it to inspire so many others to do the same after being the first woman ordained in the U.S. in 1863. And the famous story of John Murray that I've told before, right? Stranded in Barnegat Bay, New Jersey in 1770, and only convinced to preach in a pulpit that had been waiting for a Universalist message by the lack of a wind to free his ship from the shoals, going on to spread the message of universal salvation up and down the East Coast. And Carolyn Bartlett Crane, one of the prophetic women ministers who came west in the late 1800s and recreated the Unitarian Church in Kalamazoo, Michigan, turned it into People's Church, which served the people and the community rather than staying steeped in the aimless theological pondering that was the Unitarian faith of the day. And today, Bree Newsom, Pat Humphreys, Sandy O, Brandy Grayson, Rebecca Campbell and her mom Joan, Chris Taylor, Karen Van Fossen, M. Adams, Z. Hawkness, Bonnie Margulis, Joan Durst, so many people leaning into the risk of getting to know themselves and using what they find there to create spaces of love and justice for one person or 10 people or 100 people or more. And us, each and every one of us. As the Caribbean American poet and activist June Jordan wrote, we are the ones we have been waiting for. I believe that we are in a time and a place where we're being challenged to acknowledge our gifts and rise up to using them in a way that suits both those gifts and where we are right now. Each of us, like Esther, is exactly where we need to be, whether we know it yet or not. So I invite you to spend some time reflecting on your gifts. What do you have to offer that is needed in this world of hurt and division? What do you love? What do you know how to do? What are you here to do that these times call out for? Whether you cook or sew, whether you care for animals or children or sick people or disabled people or elderly people, whether you advocate or legislate or march, whether you know the law or the earth or numbers or medicine, whether you write or preach or speak or teach or sing, no matter what you do, claim it and bring it. Bring it, knowing that doing it with the intention of sharing it, of saving us, that will be what saves us. As the Reverend Dr. Howard Thurman, the African-American author and theologian and civil rights leader, said, don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Go do it, because what the world needs is people who have come alive. May we come alive together. May it be so. May we be so.